Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Kernels. Slightly unorthodox episode this week, as I've been out the country the whole week, but I didn't want to, you know, to take a fallow fortnight from it, so my colleagues kindly pitched in to make it happen today. So I'm currently sat in my hotel room in Portland. I was supposedly out here partly for vacation, partly to start work on a new script I want to write, but I happen to have come here at a time where the government's imploding, which is interesting being right in the middle of it. And as much as I've been trying to enjoy all of the city, I've just kind of ended up glued to MSNBC. You know, there's like great natural beauty here, it's sunny, there's amazing breweries, weed is legal recreationally here, but yeah, I'm sorry, I spent a lot of time sat inside just wondering, like, oh, what's the next Comey memo to come out? But shortly before I went away, I got to interview Martin Scorsese, which was just an absolute dream, really. It doesn't really get a lot bigger than that. I'd hope to include it, to be very much part of Kernels this week. But his people kind of insisted on it being a written interview. They would only agree to that, which, you know, I understand. You sometimes run into this with kind of stars of that level and age where, you know, they still have such reverence for the written word that maybe they don't really, they just hear podcasts and they're like, yeah, what the fuck is that? But it's fine. I enjoyed doing it as a written piece. And it actually kind of, I think it worked better, if I'm honest, because maybe this was partly the reason they wanted it to stay written as well, because Scorsese, he's a rambler, as it turns out. He's the kind of guy you, like, chuck him a bone, chuck him an idea, and he just kind of runs with it and sort of maybe goes off slightly on a tangent in an enjoyable way, because, you know, you could listen to that man talk forever at the amount of wisdom he has about Hollywood and the amount he's seen. And so, yeah, it was pretty crazy talking to him, and, you know, someone who can just drop in, oh, you know, when I was working on Goodfellas or Mean Streets or Taxi Driver, and you just remember the amount of films he has under his belt. I kind of didn't want to pump him for information about his next film, The Irishman, too much, because it just, I don't know, it's rare to get a chance to talk to someone like that, and if you end up going down that route, as intriguing as it might be now, once the films then come out, it's completely redundant. You know, you were just drilling them for information about a film that now everyone's seen. So I tried to keep away from that. We mostly talked about, we started by talking about his last film, Silence, just because it's such an intriguing entry in his filmography, in that it wasn't a film that everyone was kind of begging for, certainly on the producing and financial side. You know, he struggled for 28 years to get that film made, and no one wanted agreeing to give him the money to do so. Then when they finally did, you know, him having to take no salary himself and the stars just taking huge pay cuts just to work with him on this film. So we kind of talked a little bit about why did he feel so compelled to make it? And then that kind of got us into the broader questions of about what he's hoping to achieve in his films and the search for meaning, which is maybe not as obvious in some of his gangster movies, but is definitely there in Silence, what is driving him, what he's trying to discover. So yeah, unfortunately I can't play it for you now, but I'm going to retweet it from Kernels' Twitter account, which is just twitter.com/Kernels. And if you want to give it a read, I'd be delighted if you did. So yeah, now beyond that, we're going to have a little catch-up with Jessica Chastain, who my colleague Jacob Stolworthy spoke to in the last 2 weeks since we spoke. And then after that, Jacob's going to be joined by my other colleague, Jack, and they're going to talk to you about The Leftovers. Just because it's something on our desk keeps coming up time and time again, because Jacob's kind of obsessed with it, and none of us have really properly delved in yet. I think Jack's seen the first two episodes. And it's an interesting show because it's got crazy, crazy ratings, crazy reviews, but it's still not being that talked about, you know. It's not getting as much coverage and as much chat as, you know, Game of Thrones or whatever. but it feels like it's having a kind of very Breaking Bad ascension in a slightly later season. It's starting to pick up pace, and you could see it being, you know, by however many seasons they go to, by the end it being, you know, a really mainstream discussed piece of content. Oh, I can't stop saying the word content. I hate that word so much. So yeah, right off the back of Chastain, it'll be the two of them kind of trying to explain why you should be watching it, you know, when there's so much TV out there. So I hope you enjoy, and I'll see you in a fortnight for another episode.
I thought about that. I would love to work with Christopher Nolan again. Yeah. I think he's like our Kubrick.
Right.
And he's so ahead, you know, of the time. And so many people keep saying, like, what is this, Interstellar? What's going on here? It really is. It's so intelligent. It's a movie that's going to last for years and years. And that's all because of him.
Yeah, no, I do agree. And I can't wait for Dunkirk.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, as a film, I guess you just love film as well, film, yeah. TV. Yeah. So, what do you like seeing in film yourself? When you go to, if you sit down and watch a film, because obviously you're a very busy lady, what do you kind of want from something that you decide to dedicate your time to? Sit down and watch.
I want to be surprised.
Yeah.
I want to see a film and see if a character that I maybe haven't seen in movies.
Yeah.
I want to lean forward because I'm trying to like figure out what's happening and not just have it served to me. I really like foreign films because they do that. I find that especially like French cinema, the female characters are so incredible. Mm. They're so complicated. And that's what I really long for in cinema.
Yeah, nice. And is looking over your list of credits is a thank you. Nice one, thank you. It's just, you've got a very impressive list of credits. And is it something that you reflect upon, or when you get a script, do you think of it in terms of, this is a role that I would like to add to that list of credits, or is it just I don't think about what's come before, I'm just moving forward?
Yeah, I don't think about what's come before. I think about, have I already done this?
Right.
Like if I read something and go, oh, I've done this before, then there's nothing to learn, you know.
If you really want to do it, you'll still say, no, I've done it.
Yeah, but I don't really want to do something if I've done it before.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm a curious person. I like to have new experiences and adventures, and also I like characters that shatter stereotypes, and Elizabeth Sloan absolutely does that. And so that was a major part of the reason why I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm. And what I really loved about Miss Sloan was that it's, the script was just incredible. And you are pretty much in every scene. And I just think, for me, who's a non-actor, I think, how on earth do you just get your head around those lines, you know? Especially in that film with all the jargon. What's your process for learning scripts?
Takes a long time, you
yeah.
know. It's easier to learn lines when you know what the character is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that if there's a line that I keep forgetting, or I keep, you know, why is that? It's because I don't know why she's saying it.
Yeah.
So if you have a good understanding of the character, you know, if you read the script many times and you kind of have this emotional through line for what she's doing, then it's easier to memorize the lines.
Yeah.
So usually I start there. I just really familiarize myself with the woman, with her motivations, what she's, what her arc is throughout the story, and then from there I find it much easier to learn the lines.
Mm-hmm. Do you get offered many TV roles?
I do, actually. Mm. Not many, but I do get offered television roles. Right now I'm not so interested in doing that, just because I'm a curious person and I want to play different kinds of roles.
Because you're committing yourself to multi-season arcs. Yeah, I think it's just really funny because there really is no, I it's great that there's no kind of divide anymore between TV and film, but it also it levels playing field, but it's so, everyone is just so spoiled for choice now that it's almost intimidating, right?
But I love it.
It is great.
It's fantastic.
It
There's
is great.
So much opportunity out there.
Mm. Yeah. And is it just going to get better, do you think, with sites like Netflix and Amazon, that it's just giving the industry a new lease of life?
Yeah, I think, you know, the great thing about the internet, it's kind of created democracy in terms of distribution. I mean, it used to be before that studios controlled everything. There was outgoing messages, you know, that they would only allow a certain kind of movie star or a certain kind of story. And now when you have Netflix, you have people like Ryan Murphy out there who's saying, actually, I want a show about women. That's, and the audience chooses to watch that because like me, the audience also is curious for new stories and new adventures. And I'm excited by the mini networks and Netflix and Amazon Prime and all of this is happening, because I think what it's doing is it's creating an opportunity for stories about more people in society that have not had that platform.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah. And last year, are you excited for Cannes?
Yes.
Cannes is so great.
I get to be on the jury with Pedro Almodóvar and Sorrentino. It's just like so exciting. And you know, I love cinema so much. I love going to festivals because I always try to see other people's films.
Yes.
At festivals. Sometimes when you have your own there, you don't have that opportunity. But now I'm going to watch like over 20 films.
You're so lucky.
I'm so lucky.
Thank you so much.
Thank That's you. Good. Nice
Thank
to see you.
Yeah, you too. Lovely to meet you.
Hello, my name's Jack Shepherd. I'm here with my colleague Jacob Stolworthy.
Hello.
And we're here to talk about the shows you should watch, even in a climate of so many good shows being on streaming services. So, Jacob, what show are we here to talk about?
So, I'm here to tell you that there's a show called The Leftovers, and this is a TV show that you all need to be watching.
The Leftovers, the basic premise is that 2% of the world's population has just disappeared out of nowhere. And the idea is not to talk about why they've gone, but the effects that has had on people. Mm. So we kickstart things with Justin Theroux's lead character, and it's 3 years after the event has happened. Everyone's midway through, grieving, kind of coming to terms with it. Everything's still kicking off almost. Mm. Even though it's 3 years, you still see people struggling with what's going on. So I've only watched the first episode. But you've watched.
I'm up to date, so it's currently on its third and final season. But yeah, I mean, I immediately fell in love with this TV show because for me, there were many things in it that kind of sets it apart as, you know, up there with if not better than, in my opinion, the Breaking Bads and the Wires of our time. I think it's important to say that this show is created by a guy called Damon Lindelof, who co-created Lost, which I know may fill a lot of people with dread.
It's already immediately
put it puts people on the back foot. I love Lost, but I can understand that it puts people on the back foot. But I think Damon Lindelof needed, whereas Lost was a show that was kind of drawn out by the network's demands, The Leftovers is a HBO TV show, and he very much has had it meticulously planned out. Should they be given more seasons? Mm. Season one is based on a book by a guy called Tom Perrotta, who also co-created the show with Lindelof. And it's what immediately struck Damon, what struck with him when he read the book was that, yes, it's about 2% of the world's population disappearing. No, that the question of why that happened will never be answered.
So, because as you say, even though it is this massively high concept, it's still a very human story where you focus on these human characters.
It's a sobering show about grief. That's what season one is anyway. It's about grief, and it's about more than grief. It's about how can people move on when they couldn't bury the ones they loved, when they disappeared and went somewhere where they, you know, where no one knows where they went. The event in the series is called The Sudden Departure, and it happened on October the 14th. And the first episode picks up on the 3-year anniversary of that day, right? And there's a... you know, what's so good about this show is that it's set in, you watch it and you think, this could be our world. This could be how our world reacts if something extraordinary and devastating like this event occurred. And 2% doesn't sound like a lot of people, but it's millions.
I think that's the thing. Like, when I was talking to my brother about it, and I said, oh, it's about 2% of the population goes. And it doesn't seem like that much, 2%, like two is such a small number. Mm-hmm. But then you think about that, that's one in 50 people, that's, I don't know, how many Facebook friends do you have? Like 400, that's like 20 people or something like that, which completely just disappear. And then you go, oh, actually, that's a massive, massive deal. Like, you think about one of your relatives dying, that hugely impacts your life. Mm-hmm. And you have to have, you know, you have a funeral and that kind of thing. But in this show, because you don't know why they've gone, there's no chance to have a funeral. There's no, everyone's trying to find answers. And as you're kind of taking from the lost influence almost, there's this argument about religion and science and they
faith.
Immediately bring that in the first episode, where they have a scientist on this TV screen like 5 minutes in, and they go, oh, the top scientist of the world, what have you come up with? What can you say? And they just go, oh, we have no idea. We actually have no idea what's happened. And I mean, I don't know, do they question that more then as the show goes on?
Of course, but in subtle ways, because the show, it's in its in its DNA that this is what the show is about. This is why you're watching the show, but not all episodes are about this event. Season one obviously is very skewed towards not why it happened, but how it affected the people who the leftovers, people who are remaining. And I think what's great is that it explores different characters' motivations, you know, in very different ways as the season goes on. There's a cult that has spawned following this this event. They are called the Guilty Remnant, and they dress all in white, they smoke cigarettes, they don't talk, they just write down and hold up signs to communicate. And they see themselves as living reminders, because they think that the world has forgotten that this thing happened, and that there is no family, there is no love, we are all just here, but a lot of people just disappeared and there is no rhyme or reason for that, and we should all be basically reacting to that.
That's quite interesting.
Which is an interesting notion. One that you may not understand, but it's an interesting notion.
I get it, but at the same time, it's difficult. Because if people just disappears, you need to grieve for them.
You do.
And if you don't know why, you still need to continue. I don't know.
Which is a good time to talk about. There's a character played by Carrie Coon, who is absolutely storming at the minute. She's in the new season of Fargo as well. And she plays a lady named Nora Durst. And she's a bit of a rarity in the world, because she lost her entire family. You know, some people lost no one. Some people lost everyone, and it's quite interesting, because why her? And she's a you know, not to say anything, but to give anything away. But it's understandable that there will be people around the world who will hear about her and want to meet her.
She's like a semi-celebrity almost,
though. In their own way. And there's always a great there's a great moment, isn't there? There are news reports where it discusses what celebrities have gone missing, and it's just quite funny, the celebrities it plucks out. But again, in a way, to Pope. Ground it in the real world, I think the Pope is one of them. But it, later on down the line, there's an episode, 3 episodes in, which if when everyone starts watching it, they will absolutely love. It was a bit. It's a show-stopping episode. And it kind of sets the blueprint for what The Leftovers is about. So it actually hones in. There are episodes that will hone in on certain characters, and it reduces Justin Theroux's arguable lead character, reduces him to a walking cameo in his own show. Because this is, we live in a world where, you know, that people exist in their own right? So there really is no lead character in The Leftovers. But we are guided through by Kevin Garvey, who's played by Justin Theroux, who is the police chief. Who is going about his time just trying to get by, isn't he? He's a long-suffering protagonist. He's great.
It's interesting that these characters come... They're introduced in small ways and then have their own episodes, because some shows attempt to do that and then it really doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And I don't watch it, but I know you've been talking about The Walking Dead, and they've started doing that more so.
And it doesn't work as well.
It doesn't work, yeah. Why do you think it works here and not there?
I think it comes down to the quality of writing.
Okay.
I think the writing team behind The Leftovers are up to the task, and I feel that The Walking Dead are trying to balance too many things, whereas The Leftovers, it doesn't have a lot to balance, but what it has to balance is just great. it's working on another level to most TV shows I've ever seen.
But the second season, because that's not based on a book.
So season one is the book, yeah.
Season one's the book, and then season two continues that story.
It continues the story. It expands the universe and continues the story, yes.
When most things lose track of their source material, mm-hmm. often the writing can get worse. But here, the actual author of the book, does he work on the
TV
show?
He continues to work on the TV show to this very day. But season two started, I believe, a year and a half after season one. And while season one, I believe, immediately sets Leftovers apart as one of the greats, it didn't really receive the viewership or the acclaim that it deserved. Until season two arrived, and it was deemed a masterpiece by critics and viewers alike, and that's continued into season three, which is getting unanimous praise. It's one of the best. If you go on Metacritic, which their compilation of the best reviewed TV shows, The Leftovers is sitting at the top. Which, if you said to me during season one, I would never have believed. But I'm so glad that my faith in this TV show is being rewarded. So and I need more people to watch. We need more people to watch this show.
What kind of shows does it compare to, do you think?
So I think the first show that comes to mind is Twin Peaks.
Which is going through its own renaissance.
And while it's not overtly as batty as Twin Peaks is, there are elements of it. You know, there are some animals which are very different following the sudden departure. And there are just characters who do very strange things because that's how they've reacted to this event.
I mean, even the cult of smokers, you know, who smoke because they don't want to waste breath or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that, it's all a bit batty.
Yeah.
But it's all quite grounded, I feel. Well, so far it is. Mm-hmm. It all feels... I mean, we were talking about it earlier where... like something like Breaking Bad, where you can the reason Walter White is such a great character is because you can relate to him, mm-hmm. and you can think, well, if I had cancer and I was super good at science, maybe I was going to, like, why wouldn't you just make a load of meth and sell it and just like have millions and millions of dollars to see out the rest of your, you know, your few days. In this show, it's, you can see yourself, if 2% of the world just went missing, you can see yourself being one of these characters, and either you would freak out and not know what to do, and if there was a cult, perhaps you would feel, maybe I should join this, maybe I should see what's going on. And like Justin's character, you feel empathy towards him because he's reacting the way you would probably react, mm-hmm. or you can imagine your neighbour reacting like that or something. There seems to be like a slight obsession at the moment with religion on TV, mm-hmm. and people portraying what happens almost in this semi post religion mm-hmm. world.
Religion is a huge theme in this show, but so is atheism, and I think that's what, so it won't deter people. It's not trying to claim it knows what's going to happen when we die or where we go when we die. It's just trying to convey what that question does to people when a fantastical event like the sudden departure comes along to rock beliefs they may or may not have had. So I think ultimately The Leftovers is it's embedded itself as one of the greats through just being one of the best written, directed, scored. Max Richter does a score. It's incredible. TV shows that I've ever seen. It's up there with The Breaking Bads, The Wires of this world, which is, you know, that's pretty high praise. And I think if you watch the show, you will be immediately drawn in. And even if you don't, even if it doesn't touch you as much as it's touched me, I think you'll be happy you invested your time into it, and you'll be recommending it to all your friends.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.